I'm going to start with one of those easy spiritual questions. Where and when have you met God? Where and when have you met God? Where and when have you met God? Anyone want to just shout out an example? At the supermarket. Woo, that's a good one to start with. Where and when have you met God? Amen. Where and when have you met God? Many, many times. Pick one. I think that is the sermon that needs to be preached today. Let's have two more. Where and when have you met God? In the desert and? Oh, bless your heart, John. Get a silver star. There you go. A gold star. I think a lot of us go to those encounters that have been illuminating, perhaps even joyful and filling, although I imagine Social Security Online was not. So what about those times when we are alone? Those times when we are afraid? Do we meet God? Does God meet us there? I sure hope the answer is yes. This week and next week, we are going to look at two ancient encounters with God. Encounters with God during perhaps the most fearful and least likely times, a setting when God may at first seem almost absent in the dark of night, during episodes of great stress and anxiety. The time that may just turn out to be the time we experience the most extraordinary and transformative encounters with God. The two ancient examples are both drawn from the story of Jacob, who is one of the most pivotal characters in ancient Jewish history. Therefore, one of the most pivotal characters upon which we understand our Christian story. And the two scenes are two of the most pivotal moments in the story of Jacob, his two nighttime revelations and encounters with God. We hear the first one this week, that dream of the ladder of angels. And next week, the other surprising encounter of Jacob, all night wrestling with the divine. Now, while the Bible records these as extraordinary encounters, if we pause for a moment and reflect, while they may not be everyday experiences, I don't think these encounters with the holy are actually all that uncommon. Across culture, across time, and maybe even in your own life, you may have known that the Spirit communicates through dreams. While it is our bodies are at rest, while our conscious minds are released, somehow we become a more open channel available to the Spirit. And I doubt that there is anyone among us who hasn't spent restless, wakeful, fretting nights, our spirits reaching with mighty, even desperate struggle. Now, in my case, I don't remember most of my dreams well or for very long after I wake up, but there are a handful of dreams that remain memorable to me and even spiritually meaningful years after I've had them. But on the other hand, I readily admit I have spent far more than a handful of sleepless nights praying, arguing, and struggling with God myself. So as distant in time as Jacob may seem to us, we know a little bit about his experiences with God. Some of you will remember the story of Jacob, one of the most central figures in biblical history. He's always included in the short list of the, quote, ancient founding forefathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. He was one of the two sons of Isaac, which makes him a grandson of Abraham and the father of Joseph, all names that are so well remembered. And the story of Jacob spans about 10 of the 50 chapters in Genesis before it's eclipsed by the chapters of his son Joseph. And the story of Jacob paints this portrait of a colorful and intriguing and complex person. He is one of the first of many, many examples of God choosing and working through the most unexpected people, and some whom we might judge to be of questionable character. The backdrop of Jacob's story was this constant rivalry with his barely older twin brother Esau, who was more favored by his father Isaac, but Jacob was more favored by his mother Rebekah. And Jacob first tricked Esau out of his birthright as elder brother, and then with the help of their mother, Jacob cheated Esau out of the elder son's blessing, which was a huge theft in the ancient world, by blatantly deceiving their aging father. Esau, enraged, who wouldn't be, began to plot to kill his brother Jacob. Hopefully most of us would not do that. Warned of this plot by their mother, Jacob flees from home in fear of his brother's rage, running in fear of his life. He is not of the most sterling character, and this is not the best start for someone who is considered a founder of faith. It's during this running away at night, no doubt sleeping fitfully, afraid, and, let's face it, a stone as a pillow, Jacob has this famous dream. He dreams of a ladder that reaches from earth to heaven. In the Hebrew, the word is a little ambiguous. It could be stairs, could be ramp, but most translations land on ladder. The angels descending and ascending. And then God appears and echoes to Jacob the same bold promise that he made to his grandfather Abraham, this promise of security, prosperity, descendants that will bless all of humankind. And Jacob awakes in awe and wonder. He knows that this was no typical dream. He knows he has had an encounter with the living God. Jacob had no doubt that this dream of the ladder was no oddity of his dreaming state. It was a sign that he had met God. So Jacob arises a changed man. He goes to sleep in fear and unknowing, and he wakes up knowing. His fear has turned into a faith. He went to sleep with ordinary things. The place where he was, the story starts out saying, is just a certain place, a pit stop on his way to Haran. His pillow was just a rock. When he arises from his dream, the ordinary is sacred. The rock pillow is now an anointed pillar for a sacred site. The place is now called Bethel, which means house of God. His words upon awaking from the dream say everything. Surely God is in this place, and I did not know it. This is none other than the house of God, the gate of heaven. It's a revelation. And how does he respond? He responds in worship. In response to hearing God's promise, he promises himself. In response, in confidence of the promise that God will provide, he pledges back to God one-tenth of all that God will give him. Now, this is actually the second time in the Bible that it's mentioned, this pledge of 10% to God. It's called a tithe, if that is a familiar word to you, 10%. It's Jacob's worshipful response to the faithfulness of God. Now, I find it interesting to notice that this pledge is made by someone who is homeless and on the run. This is not someone who is secure in great abundance, certainly not at that moment. It is an act and worship and gratitude for the provision of the very simplest things in life: food, clothing, safety. Jacob encountered God, and he awoke changed. His life and his story are different from that moment forward. Sermon 2. It is not the point of the story, but the image of the ladder is probably the most memorable detail that we take away with us from this story. If you grew up in church, you may have grown up singing this child song, "We are climbing Jacob's ladder. Climbing Jacob's ladder, we are climbing Jacob's ladder, soldiers of the cross." A little mix between the Hebrew Bible and the Christian Bible there, but that happens a lot in church, doesn't it? It's probably the most famous detail that we remember from this story culturally and historically. And until I reread the story myself, I didn't recall how it ended. I didn't recall that Jacob had pledged himself at the end of this story, had even pledged a tithe at the end. And it was a curious coincidence, or perhaps a God incidence, if you will, that the ladder was in fact the image that our stewardship team landed on for this year's pledge campaign, which launches today. Our pledge campaign, if you've not been here before, is an invitation over the course of weeks to make a financial pledge as we prepare our budget for ministry next year. Now, over the next weeks, you will see this ladder on the stage, which is actually going to track our progress so we know how we're doing in that campaign. You'll see it in the bulletin already this week, the pledge graphic, and on the blue pledge cards that are found in your pew. Because I want us not only to recall the dream of Jacob, which had the ladder, but to remind us when we see the ladder of Jacob's transformation, the faithfulness and the commitment that flowed from this encounter with God. So, as the pledge campaign begins today, I want to conclude my second sermon by making three quick observations about ladders that I think apply to our financial life as a community. First one, ladders come in all kinds of shapes and sizes and materials. Aluminum, wood, who knows what that is? Probably aluminum. But a ladder is not a destination, it is a tool. A ladder is not the destination, it is a tool. I can't think of anyone who actually lives on a ladder, or a stairway, or a ramp, for that matter. Yes, there are people that live in attics, there are people who live in basements, there are people who live in tree houses, even. It's a pathway to get from point A to point B. It's a means to an end. So we always keep our end in sight, the destination, the reason in mind, whenever we encounter a ladder. We don't stay there. It's a tool. The second observation, a ladder allows you to go somewhere you otherwise could never go. It allows you to go somewhere you could otherwise never go, to do things you could otherwise never do. That is kind of the point of a ladder, isn't it? To fix that burnt out light bulb. I never want to be on that ladder. To retrieve a hidden treasure from the attic. To harvest that final succulent apple that is on the farthest tip of the highest limb of the tree. You need to get from here to up there. because you need to reach what will forever be beyond your reach unless you have a ladder. And my last observation, as my fall from a ladder in June reminded me in no uncertain terms, do not climb a ladder alone. Do not climb a ladder alone. Now, it is a lesson that we have all heard. Who hasn't ever heard that lesson? What you have... You certainly have repeated that lesson to me. Is that... But how many times do we make the mistake of going it alone anyway? How many dozens of times have I been on a ladder in the church by myself before I fell? I don't want to tell you, and you don't want to know. You may feel safe and secure and competent and self-reliant, and bam, there you are on the floor when you were climbing the ladder by yourself. We are in this together. We are given to one another in community. We need one another to safely and successfully climb higher and reach farther. The ladder reminds us of Jacob's transformative encounter with God. May living with a ladder for a season transform us as well.